This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
There is a particular strain of political and religious thought that we find in the American evangelical community that orients itself to supporting and justifying and undergirding the powerful.
Between impending nuclear annihilation and the President of the United States seeming to endorse white supremacists, you may have missed the dismantling of the Environmental Protection Agency. This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Brendan O'Connor, a reporter for Gizmodo Media, who's recently written an extensive piece chronicling the evangelical community and the elements behind the movement's embrace of climate change denialism, and the politicians, oil companies, and think tanks connected to it all. We look at the history of the movement, its leaders, and discuss the unlikely alliance between the evangelical right and Donald Trump. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Brendan O'Connor. Brendan is a staff reporter at Gizmodo Media's Special Projects Desk. Brendan, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for having me on.
So you just penned a piece for Splinter News, which is a subsidiary of Gizmodo Media, entitled How Fossil Fuel Money Made Climate Denial the Word of God. First, why don't you give us the basic thesis and what inspired you to write the piece?
Sure. So the basic thesis of the piece is I wanted to explore how the industrialist billionaire donor class has funded and leveraged the Christian right, and specifically the evangelical Christian right, to reinforce climate denial, and looking at the ways in which a particular branch of American evangelical theology supports and justifies really a whole slew of capitalist policies. And what inspired me to start looking into this was actually back in April. We received a tip about a weekly Bible study that members of the Trump cabinet were attending, led by a man named Ralph Drollinger. And so in reporting out that first story, I came to learn quite a bit about specifically Ralph Drollinger's views on the climate and climate change, and then kind of looking at how what impact and what influence that might have on the people who are attending his Bible studies, who include, we know, Scott Pruitt, who is running the EPA.
So if you can take a step back and give us a little bit more historical perspective on the evangelical movement in this country and its complicated relationship with science and climate change.
Sure. The evangelical movement is not nearly as monolithic as I think a lot of, shall we say, secular liberals, including myself, really understand. And that is an important thing to keep in mind as we're looking at the history of this. And where the biggest junctures happen are, it starts in the late 19th century with the publication of Darwin's On the Origin of Species, and then kind of culminates in the early 20th century with the Scopes monkey trial, in which a substitute teacher was ultimately unsuccessfully prosecuted for teaching evolution at a public school, teaching the theory of evolution at a public school. And so during this period, the existing American evangelical class, which came out of a very, very conservative, mostly Calvinist tradition, saw the world as moving in a direction that directly assaulted their belief in the infallibility and fundamental truth of Scripture. And that was not necessarily a view held by later immigrant evangelical groups from elsewhere on the European continent. There are many evangelical congregations that are much more flexible when it comes to science and scientific developments and scientific change, and in fact have a very explicit understanding that scientific truths, not only do they not contradict their religious views and understanding of the world, but complement them and enhance them, and see science as a way of you know, further understanding the complexity of creation. But this existing and deeply American evangelical community in the early 20th century, as this was all happening, kind of retreated from the modernizing world and kind of consolidated and withdrew from the public sphere in a lot of ways until the late 70s and early 80s, and especially with the Reagan administration and the Reagan administration's cultivation of that group as a voting bloc, and the alliances that were formed between the Republican Party and this deeply conservative but temporarily apolitical community, which then forged ties with the Republican establishment. And this was happening kind of all across the board, and one specific instance of it that I look at in my piece is an organization called the Coalition on Revival, which brought together several different strands of the most conservative and most fundamentalist theological thinkers, including groups like the Christian Reconstructionists and the Dominionists, and that is a kind of a shorthand for a theological perspective that the Christian Reconstructionists, for example, in short, believe that contemporary laws ought to be derived from the laws set out in the Old Testament, and that is the proper Christian political philosophy. That is a very extreme view that is not shared, that was not shared by everyone at this conference, which took place over years. But the Christian Reconstructionists were very influential on it, and many of those people went on to become very prominent figures in the religious and political right-wing firmament, and that includes people from like the Family Research Council, and I'm trying to remember who else was there. The list is quite long.
It also includes people like Jim Wallis, who emerged as an important voice from the left within the evangelical movement in the last decade. He penned an opinion piece for Time magazine entitled "The Bible Calls for Moral Action on Climate Change." And to what you were just speaking about, let me just read you a little passage here, because this is kind of the section of the Bible that I think a lot of controversy stems from. He writes, "Some of the most inspiring words in the entire Bible are found in the opening pages of Genesis. Here we are told that humans were created in God's image and given a divine mandate to care for creation." So right there, that's kind of the crux of the issue. Are we here to preserve the earth, or are we here to preserve ourselves? And that seems to be one of the fundamental discussion points within the evangelical movement. But it seems like political expediency has kind of won the day, if we have to paint a broad brush for the evangelical movement and their position on climate change today. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I would say so. And I mean, over the last 20 to 30 years, there absolutely have been dissenting voices, specifically on the issue of what used to be called global warming and now we refer to as climate change. Jim Wallis is one of them. Another one who I spoke to extensively in researching and reporting my piece is the Reverend Mitch Hescox and Richard Cizik, who used to be a senior executive with the National Association of Evangelicals, was actually really kind of marginalized and pushed out of the organization as a result of his efforts to try to bring a more proactive environmentalist agenda. And that was deeply opposed by the powerful right-wing elements, both inside the NAE and outside of it, who wanted to keep the focus of the evangelical community on basically two issues, abortion and same-sex marriage, and opposing it, obviously opposing access to both of those things. And those interest groups have largely been successful, but that does it does appear to be changing a little bit. Obviously, the question is whether or not the growth of, especially among young evangelicals, the growth of support for climate action, whether or not that's too little too late.
It ain't necessarily so. It ain't necessarily so. The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. Little David was small, but oh my. Little David was small, but oh my. He fought big Goliath, who laid down and died. Little David was small, but oh my.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Brendan O'Connor. He's a staff reporter at Gizmodo Media Special Projects Desk.
So let's fast forward a little bit. You have a very helpful chart in this long piece, which I think we'll try to post on seachangeradio.com as well. It's called Investing in Spiritual Influence. It's a brilliant kind of thumbnail sketch of big oil, evangelical movement, and the levers of power right now in the current administration. Why don't you, we're a radio show, so we can't really show this, but maybe you can kind of spell out this chart for our listeners.
Sure. Yeah. So, this is a very adroitly done chart done up by our art director Jim Cook, who is very talented. What we are trying to illustrate here is the way in which financial support from people like the Koch brothers and their affiliates and ExxonMobil or the National Christian Foundation, how that financial support translates into not just political influence, but has supported a particular theological perspective that members of the Trump administration and members of Congress are either sympathetic to or explicitly hold themselves, that then inform their policy decisions. And so what I'm very interested in and what I hope this chart and this whole story are able to demonstrate is the influence that people like the Koch brothers and the DeVos family and the Mercer family, the influence that they wield is not just a matter of paying someone off in order to get a policy passed. It's about creating, shaping, and guiding a entire ideology and an entire worldview, the parameters of which are set by these extremely wealthy people.
And some of the people who've for years been directly linked to the donors behind a lot of the policies that any environmentalist has come to dread. These people are now running the government. And you mentioned Scott Pruitt, but we haven't talked about Jim Inhofe. James Inhofe, the senator from Oklahoma, is kind of the linchpin behind a lot of these connections, isn't he?
Yes. Inhofe, I think it's fair to say he has kind of led the intransigence on climate action in Washington, D.C. And Jim Inhofe is a deeply religious man.
We know him as the guy who brought a snowball onto the floor of the Senate and it was saying, see, there's snow, so climate change doesn't exist, guys. People who don't really follow the ins and outs of the Senate may have still seen that.
Yes, that is a famous moment of his deft rhetorical strategies. But Inhofe has also invoked religious justifications for his climate denialism, and has used religious language to condemn people who are advocates for climate action. And his staff now has kind of flooded through Scott Pruitt's EPA, and I think that there is a lot of alignment in their political and religious views. I think they have a lot in common. And Inhofe's staff is now helping Pruitt enact his agenda.
So, Brendan, another organization we haven't touched upon is the Cornwall Alliance. What is their mission and why are they important in this story?
So the Cornwall Alliance is composed of quite a few people. It's a kind of a loose network of climate skeptic and denialist scientists and also theologians and economists that is led by a man named E. Calvin Beisner, who came out of the Coalition on Revival that I was speaking about earlier. And the Cornwall, the function of the Cornwall Alliance has been as the kind of central evangelical bulwark against any sort of environmentalist dissent within the political evangelical community. And Cal Beisner is an extremely well-read and articulate individual and a skilled rhetorician who kind of works as the bulldog who sniffs out and suppresses anyone who is not towing this line that specifically that, you know, that towing the line specifically to oppose environmental regulations or any kind of aggressive tax on polluters, but then also who doesn't share the religious view that climate change can't be as bad as these hysterical environmentalists are making it out to be, because that would run completely counter to God's will for humanity, that he made his creation and gave it to us for us to use as we will.
Yes, that kind of gets to what I was mentioning with the Jim Wallace quote from that timepiece, is like, are we doing God's will by only protecting humans, or do we also need to protect his creatures and the earth along with it? But when power and political calculus comes into play, you can pretty much interpret these passages any way you want. And you also spoke to Bob Inglis, who is a former Republican congressman from South Carolina, who some people may remember that name because he's been able to kind of speak out since he was primaried. And you quote him saying, "A guy who has given full-throated defenses of coal has told me privately, coal is dead. We know that. We're just trying to figure out how to move on." Meanwhile, he keeps on talking about coal. "Members of Congress are afraid of the people they represent, but they're terrified of the activists within their own party because that's who takes you out in a primary." And that's exactly what happened to Inglis, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Inglis was primaried during the rise of the Tea Party in 2010, and was particularly targeted for his openness to pursuing environmental regulations. I mean, and it ought to be said that Inglis and his views are extremely pro-business and pro-capitalist. I mean, this is not a left-wing guy. He's open about believing that the best way to deal with the consequences of climate change and to try to preempt further consequences is to incentivize industry to take up pursuing those solutions rather than trying to bring that under the purview of the state. But yeah, and Inglis and many others that I spoke to who were either in government or are politically connected evangelical leaders shared the same thing with me, that in private conversations there are between a dozen and 15 probably senators who, Republican senators, who publicly deny or express doubt about climate change and the severity of climate change and what we actually need to do about it, yada, 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 who privately will concede to people in their affiliate groups, people who with whom they share religious beliefs, that yes, that this is a crisis, that this is a catastrophe, but the political landscape simply won't allow them to do anything about it. And in many of my conversations, I was very frustrated with the evangelical activists who shared this with me, but who themselves were not willing to identify any of the people that they had those conversations with, because they feel that if they did, then those people would suffer the same fate as Bob Inglis and get primaried and get thrown out of office and get replaced with someone who is more of a hardliner. Whereas now, they might be dealing with a hypocrite, but they're at least dealing with a hypocrite who will let them in the door and who is open to the possibility that if the political landscape changes and if there's grassroots support for them to take action, that then they would do so.
Ever since the world ended, there's no more black or white. Ever since we all got blended, there's no more reason to fuss and fight. Dogmas that we once defended no longer seem worthwhile. Ever since the world ended, I faced the future with a smile.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to staff reporter at Gizmodo Media, Brendan O'Connor. So, Brendan, we were talking about hypocrites, and there's no greater hypocrite than the one who's sitting in the Oval Office currently. There's been a lot of discussion about how the evangelical community has been able to rationalize backing Donald Trump, but how do evangelicals square their allegiance to this vulgarian Donald Trump? Is climate change denial maybe a common cause for both parties?
I think that amongst the evangelical leadership, especially on the right wing of the evangelical community, there are people who are more invested in their access to power than they are in the principles that ostensibly guide them. That is something that is true across the political spectrum and regardless of the theology that you're coming from. But there is a particular strain of political and religious thought that we find in the American evangelical community that orients itself to supporting and justifying and undergirding the powerful. And I think that the Trump presidency really lays that bare, because he is so vulgar and because he is, I mean, really just so secular. Like, you could not come up with someone who is more antithetical to the, you know, stated values of this community. And many of these leaders acknowledge that and will say, you know, basically, like, God works in mysterious ways, and that, like, he's the president, he's who they're working with, and he doesn't have to share their beliefs for him to be useful to them. And I know that that does not sit well with the rank and file, so to speak, membership of the community, kind of the lay people. That's a concern of the powerful and the attendants to power, rather than the people who are sitting in the pews. And I think that that contradiction and that gap is only going to widen. What comes of that, I don't know. But that is something that is going to be resolved one way or another.
Well, it's a fascinating piece, and we will link to it on Sea Change Radio. It is entitled, How Fossil Fuel Money Made Climate Change Denial the Word of God. Brendan O'Connor, thanks for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by The Bar Kays, Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong, and Mose Allison. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.